FYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey loyalty program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars,
Perceptor here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus star?
Ratchet, will you take the chorus back?
Transformers!
Okay, here's the thing. I am so Star Wars out, I don't care anymore. I do want to see the movie, but I don't care about watching it 40 times and analyzing it. I watched it once. It looks good. That's fine. I'll wait till it comes out. I never read any of the Expanded Universe stuff. Never bought any of the figures.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? I'm talking about Transformers, man.
I thought you said about Star Wars.
This is TFYLP. This is about Transformers, all right? We're talking about Expanded Universe. We're talking about classics.
I thought you were talking about Star Wars.
No. I mean, come on, man. That George Lucas stuff, there's nothing about that. You know what? I mean, my Transformers got everything on whatever George Lucas has to say, all right? Talk to me, guys. What else in the fandom has just gone and has just grown year after year? We didn't take no hiatus, all right? We ain't got no Jar Jar Binks looking, you know, wannabe thing going on. We got our stuff. Now, I mean, Shia LaBeouf thing, I ain't going to talk about that. But we ain't going to talk about the movie so much, but we're ever evolving. We are transforming for the new millennium. What do you guys think?
Millennium, that's like 15 years ago. We might as well transform and transcend.
Shut up, Jim! Don, go ahead.
Yeah, or in the far-flung future of 2000 using punch cards.
By the way, just so guess what? I'm back, and it's TFYLP, episode 176, and we're going to talk about the fandom. We're going to talk about what you want. No, we're going to talk about what we want. What we want to see. What do we want to see happen? You know, our biggest hopes and dreams for the Transformers community, not this other thing that Don was talking about, this Star Wars thing or whatever. We're talking about the Transformers, all right? Things that we hold dear and near to our heart. And with me, by the way, I am Megamus, as you know. And with me will be Headmaster Don.
Hi.
Moroni Prime.
Hi.
And we're also going to have Proto Man, if he can ever get his butt out of the gym. Now, I mean, he should be like 200-300 pounds every time I talk to him. He's going to the gym. But that's beside the point. If he ever makes his butt out here, he's going to give his 2 cents or 1.5 cents, because it's Canadian, into it. And we're going to talk about this stuff. Yeah. But the topic tonight is about if you could pick anything that you wanted to do in any media and you wanted to make it actual Transformers mythos, what would you do? What would you do? What would be your contribution? And you know what? I'm going to start with Don.
Okay. All right. Okay. So we'll start with that. What I would want to see would be a series that looks at the Transformers universe in its entirety, from G1 through Beast Wars, Robots in Disguise, the Armada trilogy, or the AEO trilogy, and everything else. So maybe even some of the Japanese series. Now, I would love for this to be a television series, but with the different animation styles, I think a comic from IDW would capture this the best. And the reason I want to see this is because there's a lot of people out there who don't know all the stuff that came before. You know, there's new fans all the time. So I'm looking at it as from a standpoint of a Sliders kind of series, where in we have a new character. I'm thinking along the lines of like Evac from the Transformers ride. He's from the movie universe, but it's a character that has no real fleshing out yet. So he is the point of view character as well as a human from that universe. Now, again, it may be a different Evac from the movie universe, because what I would want to do is Optimus Prime is missing. His Optimus Prime got lost in a space bridge explosion with Megatron. He is somewhere out in the multiverse. And I apologize, my sinuses are running, so I apologize for that. So Evac and this human have been sent to find their Optimus Prime so the Matrix can stop Unicron. That's the only choice they have. So you start out with stakes pretty high. And through this series, you would see Evac and this human traveling through space bridges, again, similar to Sliders, going to all the alternate realities that we have seen in the past 30 years. They would go to G1 and meet that Optimus Prime and learn about that era. They would go to Beast Wars and meet Optimus Primal and other characters. They would go to Cybertron and meet those characters. And each book would be in the art style of that universe. Now, it might mean a rotating cast of artists. It might be a couple of artists that are very switchable in their designs. So that way, each universe could have that feel of the way it looked. Like if they went to the animated universe, that's a very specific design style, unlike anything else that came before or since. So you would need someone like Derek White or someone familiar with the animated universe maybe helping out with that. And the reason I'm doing it this way is for a couple of reasons. You get the flavor of all these universes. If you're familiar with Tokusatsu, there was a Kamen Rider named Decade who did the same thing before in Tokusatsu, where he visited the previous 9 Kamen Riders. They weren't the same ones, but they were different variations of the previous 9 Riders. So Evac and this human are meeting all these different universes. And as they travel through these universes, they're picking up characters that are going to help them. Either an Autobot, maybe a Decepticon, like, say, add Cyclonus from one universe. Just not Armada, but that's just me. And again, you would pick up, say, from the Prime universe. They visit the Prime universe. Miko would tag along. Again, it's my story. You know, I'd have to have Miko in there.
But Lucas Blair, please.
I thought about that. They would be coming from the universe, opening up one of the issues, coming from the Kiss Players universe, and just making references to what was going on, so readers who know would know.
Okay.
Without worrying about touching on some of the more iffy parts of that universe.
So would it be kind of the situation where they come out of the space bridge portal, they look around and like, we screwed up, go back.
So and as they're going through these universes and getting all these allies and getting the pieces of trying to find Evax Prime. They're being hunted by one of the members of the Transtech because they're basically doing the one thing the Transtech don't like. You're jumping dimensions. You're basically just punching holes in the realities and going from one to the other. So you have this chase, this prisoner, not prisoner, the fugitive concept going on where, let's say it's Rhinox. Rhinox is a fan favorite. You could have Transtech Rhinox with his voice actor return. Well, if it was, I'm sorry, if it was, you know, in a series, but, and as the story progresses, we find out bits and pieces of where Evax Prime is, why the Transtech are chasing them or trying to stop them, and all the people they're finding is for a reason. The people they're finding is for a reason. And then, of course, at the end of the series, you would have the build-up for they either find Optimus, they find the Matrix. There's a couple of twists there about dum-dum-dum.
The twist.
And then you would have your big two-issue finale. So that, and the good thing is, books that sell higher than, I'm just saying, as they look at the history of the series, they can judge how the fans react to these universes. And maybe if some of these universes, like, say, everybody's going to love the 2001 Robots in Disguise universe. We know that. So when those sales have 2 or 3 million copies, then IDW would say, no, hey, let's do a series based on this universe. And then maybe that would help branch out some others.
So you're saying have one media dictate what another one does?
Well, no, I'm just saying
Not that that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I'm just looking at it from a standpoint of getting more fans involved in the other universes. Say one book would be in Master Force. One book would be in Victory. Just to get a flavor of the Japanese continuity. You could have one in Beast Wars and Beast Machines. Maybe the series that went back-to-back in television could go back-to-back in the comics, just so that way you have some kind of continuity between those universes. But that way the fans would know more about all these universes. The people at Hasbro and IDW would see, okay, people really like this animated universe comic when they were in the animated universe. Let's look at seeing if we can make an animated comic, say, i.e. season 4. So Hasbro and IDW gets a lot of feedback from the sales. The fans get a new comic every month that is a whole different universe. Older fans have classic characters coming back. You have new fans with new characters like Evac and his human partner that are traveling with him. And then you have a great big buildup to a familiar, a familiar entity like Unicron. But there'll be a few twists and turns on the end. So that's just, again, it's a lot of different ideas from a lot of different things. But with Transformers, it works because you could travel through all these universes, meet all these different people, and all these different versions of Prime and Megatron and so forth.
I have a question, Don.
That's what I want to see.
I have a question. When they would go to each of these different universes, would they be in any way affected by the traveling between them? Would there be any kind of adverse effects on their form or their structures to conform better with that universe? Like if they go into the animated universe, would it all of a sudden be an animated Evac and companion?
Exactly.
So kind of like Quantum Leap then.
Yeah, basically they're assuming the form of what they would look like in that universe.
Okay.
And it's a running gag in the book because they don't see it, but the reader does.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you because what about, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what about timelines and with the Nexus and the whole Bakkan comic book line that they have going where they go between realities?
Well,
but they kept the same form in every reality.
Well, I'm thinking that's part of the grand plan. Is that with them journeying to these universes and becoming part of these universes in those forms, in those designs, then they learn about those universes from like a an in-universe perspective. They become part of the universe, and they basically learn that all these different realities are different, but they're all equally important.
Well, so you're telling me that if it's, let's just say, and I'm going to pick a character because he's in two of my of the dimensions, however you want to put it. Let's say you had Jazz, and he goes from a G1 Jazz, you know, heavy metal loving, you know, music aficionado, and then he jumps over to animated, and he is a samurai wannabe, very centered individual. You're talking about two different aspects of the same quote-unquote character. So you're saying that you would have a comic which would explain how that person would be the same but different because of two different realities? Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is, Jim hit on it with like Quantum Leap. Either they would become, in physical appearance, like that reality's Jazz. So let's say it was G1 Jazz. He would look like animated Jazz, but he wouldn't be animated Jazz. He would
look like animated Jazz to the reader.
Right, but he would still be the same Jazz that went through the portal initially. So, you know,
my question would be, how would he react to problems? Would he react to problems as G1 Jazz or animated Jazz?
Well, that's just it. Part of the thing is, he's learning how all these different aspects of the same person can come into play. So he's learning more about aspects of himself that he may not know that he has.
I mean, because you're talking about a real big, and I just picked that one out of, you know, out of my butt. But that one is a very big, broad, you're talking about two different spectrums. You're talking about someone that's very, you know, focused on music, and another one that's very centered into a,
But
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they're two different characters.
But see, but again, it's also like he has to pull off being this other Jazz.
Right.
And that's part of the drama is, will they get caught? Will they be found out that they're not who they look like they are?
So you would look at it more as a drama than as a comedy because he looks like animated Jazz in a G1 universe?
Well, not really. There'll be comedic moments. But you're starting out with the stakes of Unicron is coming. We have no Prime. We have no Matrix. He is somewhere out in the multiverse.
So you would be going more towards the original animated movie, to where it had funny moments, but it had serious moments.
Exactly. You know, because they can't forget it. Now, Evac, again, using him as my POV Autobot.
Right.
He can't forget what is at stake. And again, by using Evac, since we haven't seen him in what he would look like in these other universes, then this would be a really great thing for the artist to create these different versions of him. Let's say he was in the Beast Wars universe. Evac is he guards humans. He rescues the humans from the battles. So what would he be in the Beast? What animal would he be in the Beast Wars universe? And that would give the artist a lot of creativity to flesh this character out. If he was in Robots in Disguise universe, either first or second, would he be an ambulance? Would he be something else? You know, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of this that I haven't actually sat down and I'm not actually sat down, to be honest, and done every universe with every thing. But, you know, that's just my general thing, is that way you just see all the universes with a character that's new to the reader. So as he's learning about the universe, so is the reader.
Go ahead.
No, that's it.
I was just thinking, so you're talking about someone yourself that likes different aspects or dimensions. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's wonderful. You like the different things that they come up with. But you would like a character that kind of floats between all of them, that kind of connects it all together.
Right. Okay, well, I'll bring it up this way for comic fans. Back in the 90s, we had Marvel and DC did the crossover where the Amalgam Universe was created. I love Amalgam. I wish it would come back. I wish Marvel and DC could work together enough nowadays to have Amalgam as a standalone imprint running concurrently in its own universe. But that's probably not going to happen. But
you remember Sony can never go along with it.
Yeah. But you remember the character Access. He was at home in both universes because he could cross over from one to the other.
Right.
So that's what I'm thinking of is this new character, this EVAC character.
Yeah, but see, then I would take it one step further because I would look at what you're saying, and you know what I would like to see? Rather than a shattered glass, I would like to see an amalgamate. I would like to see, you know, a Megatron Prime hybrid, Prowl Cyclonus hybrid. The conglomerate of the two, like they did. To me, I think that would make a very interesting story.
Right. And again, you know, if they wound up in the Shattered Glass universe, if IDW and FunPub, if that worked out, I'm just saying, they've met all these noble, heroic characters and all these evil, warlike characters.
Sure.
And then there's suddenly they're in a universe where everything is mirror, mirror. That would be a real shock to the readers who aren't familiar with the Shattered Glass universe or who have not seen Mirror Mirror from Star Trek.
Which, by the way, anyone that hasn't seen the Mirror Mirror of any one of the incarnations of Star Trek, shame on you. Yeah. If you have not seen the DC Marvel team up, also, shame on you, but that's beside the point.
That's beside the point.
Yeah, you're right. You're talking about also integrating Shattered Glass. You want to be honest with me? I mean, you could even go so far as to say the, I ain't gonna say. Yeah, I will. GoBots. You could integrate anything into this.
Well, actually, you really couldn't do the GoBots because Hasbro only has rights to the names, not the likenesses. But one universe,
the name, baby.
I know. But here's something else you could do if you really wanted to get weird. You could maybe have the annual be set in the robotics universe. Because according to the wiki, the robotics characters are the Autobots and Decepticons of their time stream.
Right. But I'll go back and say, yeah. What about Crasher?
Well,
you hear it looks at Crasher.
Fracture.
Fracture. It doesn't think Crasher.
Yeah.
It's a likeness. It's a personality. And then you go, oh, I can see they couldn't use the name.
Yeah.
It's not always about the names.
Right. Well, I really can't say because I had not thought of that. Personally, if it was me, I would not include the FunPub Shattered Glass, even though it would be great and interesting. Because you've already got so many regular Hasbro universes, and it's a 12-issue maxi series, and you have.
So you're going to limit it.
Well, I'm just saying I doubt they would do a regular ongoing
issue 80 12-issue limited series.
Huh?
That's
yeah.
By the way, that's where I'm going with this, but that's okay.
Yeah. So I'm just saying. Also, the fact that if they make it a mini-series or a maxi-series of 12 issues, it's going to have to be a tighter, more concise outline to get the job done without them starting a bunch of plot lines in the first six issues, and then they say, oh, we're being canceled at issue 7.
Well,
we got to wrap everything up. So
let me just give you a little bit of thing here. Let me ask you this much. You followed the original 80 episodes of Transformer, the comics.
Yeah, the 80 issues, yes.
Okay. And were all the plots and twists and everything tied up in a nice little bow by the time you were done?
No, it wasn't. Okay. But what I'm saying is that if they know they have only 12 issues to work with, that would mean they'd have to have a bit of a tighter script to make sure what's left to tease for whatever comes next is not not something major that should have been answered.
Did you read the first six issues? Do you think it was all tied up to end at issue six? No.
But again, comics are different. Writing is different. The industry itself is different now than what it was. And I'm just thinking if you do it as a 12 issue maxi series and know that you've got 12 issues, barring weirdness, it would help in the tightness of the plot.
No, I'm not knocking you at all. I'm just saying, taking your idea, I personally would do that. I would leave loose ends. I would leave plot lines, you know, just hanging there, because you want the reader wanting more.
Right.
When I left way back in the 80s, and I collected every issue, and I waited every week, month for that issue, and I got to 80, and this was the end, I was pissed. I was pissed because there were so many plots that they either left gone or they tied them up quickly.
I think Simon Furman has said that he and the rest of everybody on Transformers found out as they were finishing up 77 or 78.
Yeah, it was very close to the end.
That they only had two issues left. So,
right.
And 79, the last Autobot, was almost finished by that point, so they had almost no time to finish that up.
I'm not knocking them.
Yeah.
I'm saying as a reader, I felt cheated. But that goes on to my point. Yeah. I'm not going to do that next. So Don, you're talking about taking a lot of different areas and trying to mingle them all together. Now, are we going to do which media you would do this in, or are we just going to leave it as
well,
is?
Well, like I said, I would love to see a series, because you could get a lot of the old voice actors back as Easter eggs for the fans. You could have a lot of old – it'd be reused footage or backgrounds and stuff like that, but you'd see old familiar locales. Problem is, though, with the different animation styles for each universe, you really could not do that in a 2D, 3D animated series because of all the different models involved, all the different drawings involved. So a comic would get the best of each universe across.
You don't think a mesh would work well?
Well, I'm just thinking
with the different styles.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, look at Green Lantern, the animated series. It was fully animated. A good series. I enjoyed it immensely. But that's why you were so limited on the number of lanterns you had, because of all the models. It's the same thing on Prime. You know, you had a lot of characters, but not as much as if you had gone 2D and hand-drawn and could have added more characters if you needed to. Again, I know it's not that – I'm just pulling it down to the – it's not that simple. I'm pulling it down to the basics. So a comic, you could adjust each issue if the artist was able to adjust their style, or if they had different artists. So you could have one issue look like the animated universe. Next issue, look like Masterforce. The next issue, look like Cybertron.
Mm-hmm.
So your art styles and your flavors of that universe would come across better – than picking a generic 2D universe with 3D effects on versus an actual television series or a web series.
Just as long as it didn't end up looking like Energon turned out.
Again, that's why I would love to see something like they've done with recent animation series. But again, the art to get the flavor of each universe, it needs to look like that universe. Because you notice in Green Lantern how everything was basically all your desert planets were just the same brown sand. It's everywhere. Get used to it. So I mean, you were really limited by the 3D of the series on how much textures and features and characters you could have. And even if they did it as 2D overall with 3D effects. Say when they open a space bridge to go to the next universe, that'd be a really nice 3D effect. You would have to have something so generic to cover the entire series I'd be afraid the design flavor of these universes would be lost. Like, animated would not look like animated. Optimus might have the chin, but he wouldn't have those colors. He wouldn't have the definition. He wouldn't look like animated Optimus in visually.
Right.
So that's what I would like to see. Basically, Transformers meet Sliders.
Interesting.
Now, if I remember right, didn't Sliders end off with an unresolved plot as well?
We're not talking about that. That doesn't.
Stop it! Don't do that.
Yeah, if we don't talk about it, it didn't happen.
Of course, Quantum Leap did that too. Anyway.
Not helping. So basically,
I get what you mean, though.
Yeah, that's my Blue Sky Pipe Dream 4 series is basically all the worlds, anything can happen.
Nice.
All right, Jim, what do you think?
Well, as far as anything that would be considered a brainchild of mine, probably the closest I ever came to anything like that would be a fanfic idea that a friend of mine and I kind of started throwing together. Never really went anywhere, and we never really could get our heads together enough to sit down and actually write much of anything. The furthest I got was like 6 pages of a fanfic that's pretty much a script. It's dialogue spoken. There's no real... Nothing really in the way of, you know, setting or, you know, so-and-so walked over here or any of that. It's just the spoken dialogue. this actually was written probably, it must have been 99 or 2000. You know, it's about 15, 16 years ago. Beast Machines, I want to say, was still a new thing then. Robots in Disguise, Armada Universe, any of that. None of that had happened yet. Alternators, a toy Unicron was unheard of at that point. But it was something I jotted down in this little notebook. It was a compilation between my friend Arlen Johnson and myself. It was called Chrono Wars. And it was a story that was centered around the Generation 1 cartoon series, the 98 episode G1 series, but it took it in kind of a different direction because it utilized several plot points from a few of the Heritage episodes. Like I think one of them was the Killing Jar had the travel through the black hole and everybody was a weird color. Forever is a Long Time Coming that had the time window.
Yeah, the A3.
Yeah, the A3 being Alpha Trion and all that. And what it essentially was my attempt at kind of what's called a Mary Sue, where I inserted my own fan-created character to be kind of a background character and interact with a lot of the Heritage Generation 1 personalities. I took a few liberties with it. Like, for instance, the whole unresolved Jetfire, Skyfire thing that we couldn't really make heads or tails of back then. I made it where Jetfire and Skyfire were brothers, kind of like Sideswipe and Sunstreaker are. One of them had a face, one of them had a visor.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that idea. So basically you found harmony with the characters.
A little bit. What ended up happening is they were searching for this MacGuffin, which I called the Chrono Matrix, or Chronos? Matrix. This will do that right here. I don't know if you can see it too well. Looks a little weird, but anyway. And it utilized the technology from the dimensional travel as well as the time window and a couple other MacGuffin-related things. And it can essentially bring an end to the multiverse or build upon it, either or. Like I said, I've got 6 pages of spoken dialogue. It takes place after the 3-episode rebirth, the season 4. And the Decepticons are able to kind of steer Scorponok a little bit after flying out of control for God knows how long, almost out of power, and they sense a power source on a nearby planet that turns out to be Quintessa, or a new Quintessa. So they all go search for that. The alliance with the Hive and the Decepticons kind of implodes upon itself. Galvatron ends up blowing Zarek away, and the Decepticons begin building a new head for Scorponok. And the remnants of the Hive are trying to build their own head before the Decepticons can to try to take over Scorponok. I don't know. But I had a kind of a odd cast, kind of a hodgepodge cast of Autobots that I was going to have get together. It was, let me find my little roll call here. It was, there we go. It was Blue Streak, Retgar, Blaster, Warpath, Powerglide, RC, Jetfire, Skyfire, Cuff, and my character, which was Dominus Prime, which was my old username years ago. It was kind of a bounty hunter type character. And then of course, Skylynx. I don't know if I say him or not. But Skylynx would be like their main transport. And they were based around an outpost of Cybertron called Moonbase 3. Because they never really said that Cybertron didn't have more than two moons. They just assumed there were only two moons. But they had their base there. Anyway, this energy source coming from New Quintessa was detected by both parties, by the Autobots and by the previously lost Decepticons and Hive, and so they all start convening toward New Quintessa, and that's like their mission. Which I never got further than them detecting the signal, and literally the line I left off on was, what are your orders? And it never went beyond that point. But what was eventually going to happen, or what I had in mind for happening, was they would run into each other on New Quintessa. A battle would ensue, of course. And something would happen to damage this this unfinished Kronos Matrix and cause some kind of, I don't know if you necessarily want to call it transwarp or whatever, but some kind of explosion that would essentially take and not only take all the multiverse and smash it together into one twisted, kind of like M.C. Escher painting type of universe, or like Looney Tunes Wacky Land. It'd be a little bit like that, but Transformers oriented. And everybody would be altered to where they would be not only different colors, but their alternate modes or their robot modes, either one, would have elements that would resemble other Transformers. For instance, Blue Streak would be dominantly like a light speed body type, named the Technobot. Only the parts of the spoiler would be able to split down, and he would have a nose cone come out, and so light speed could also have or Blue Streak rather, could have kind of a flight mode, because Lightspeed always wanted to fly, but he was a ground-based vehicle. I forget who I had. It was the scattershot one. I want to say that was Perceptor or Blaster, one of the two. Probably Blaster, I think. But the colors were going to be like blue and silver, different odd things like that. Jetfire and Skyfire, I think I was going to have them forcibly fused, kind of like Megatron and Ratchet were in G1 Marvel, and have the dual personality conflicting, and so that would get all kinds of strange. But everybody would be affected in different ways, and it was our thinking that they could eventually maybe somehow since they did G2 just a few years prior to this to us coming up with the story. Maybe they still have those toys they could, reissue, in yet another color scheme, some of these G1 figures, which given, this is before a lot of the modern Transformer sites even existed on the internet. So, a lot of this that wouldn't really make sense or be realistic now, you know, back then, we're like, you know, maybe they could. Maybe we can send it into Hasbro, you know. But, it was essentially going to be kind of a cluster mess, for lack of a better term. Just kind of a knockdown, drag out mesh of everything together. So.
Good. All right.
So let me ask you this one thing. Would Moonbase 3 have been... Do you think if you'd gotten around to it, would you have thought of making Moonbase 3 basically Unicron's head into the third Moonbase?
What I had in mind for this was essentially in the 86 movie, Unicron only devoured Moonbases 1 and 2. We never actually had stated the exact number of moons that orbit Cybertron. We never got that number. There could be eight or nine moons around Cybertron. We don't know. We just know that two of them were eaten. So this just happened to be yet another moon.
And one of them looks like a rabbit.
I like it. That works.
Yeah. That actually, I mean, I would like to have seen them something progress after Rebirth, like, you know, a comic series after that, or a movie, or just something, you know.
Yeah, and that's kind of where this was going to go. Just follow up, bring a little closure to the Rebirth, wrap up, and have everything done once and for all with no loose ends.
Yeah, because basically after Rebirth, the Beast Wars, it's like we don't know how much. Well, 300 years, give or take.
Yeah.
But we have no idea what happens in that time. It's like the 20 years after the end of the television series and the movie. Although we've talked about this before, we know what happens because of the movie, so it's kind of hard to tell stories in that 20-year gap. But when you've got that 300-year gap, you know,
a lot of time for a lot of things to happen.
I like that idea. I do.
I mean, since it's only these few pages, I mean, I can read it right quick. It's not all that long. If you guys like to hear it, I'll warn you though. It is so horrible, but it's good, but in a bad way. Because keeping in mind, this was late '90s, 2000, teenage little me and my buddy trying to come up with stuff based off of an '80s cartoon that we thought sounded cool at the time. So,
That might be better to. I don't know about Brett, but if you wrote it out and put it on like fanfiction.net, mm-hmm. so everybody could read it. You could do that.
See, that's the thing, is it's not really a very well done out story. It's like I said, it's pretty much nothing but dialogue. I have a little like one paragraph kind of introduction to the series, as it were, that gives kind of a rundown and a summary of what's what and why things are what they are.
Okay.
But other than that, it's just this person talking to this person talking to this person. So I mean, it'd be real quick.
Well, as long as it doesn't say he said this and she said this and he said this.
Essentially, what I have is the dialogue as it would be spoken. But next to it, I have the name of the person speaking. But I don't have it like so and so said to so and so that.
No
narrator.
Right now, we have a couple people watching. We have a few people on Facebook.
People watch this thing? Cool.
You go.
Hi guys.
Until someone hits me a message on the Facebook, TFYLP, on the Facebook, and says stop.
Well, I'll tell you, it's only like 5.5-6 pages, so it's
there's oh, not. Oh man, any... someone said stop. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
Are you serious? Oh, okay.
I'm just kidding.
Nice. All right. Well, let me start with the introduction here. It's Transformers: Chrono Wars, and it starts out. I had in mind kind of a fading in from black type of thing with looking at just the like a glowing image of the Chrono Matrix here. And it just a kind of a narrator's voiceover coming on saying, Don, you muted me.
Sorry, not what I was trying to do.
I was like, wait, what? I'm
muted. All right, okay.
But in your heart,
I was trying to get.
Like it was the best thing to do.
I was trying to get his. I was trying to get you locked on your window, and
I can do that.
It took you as mute or something.
I say, Brett, you said until somebody says stop. You didn't say until somebody actually reached out to the internet and stopped me themselves.
Who made you stop? True. I did not.
It was not me. It was Massey. I was framed. It was Massey.
That was fantastic.
Blaming the cat again.
Fantastic.
By the way, for those of us in our audio listening only, Don just muted everyone in the cast to shut Jim up. It was on purpose.
It was not an actual deliberate action of malice.
It doesn't matter. It was perfectly timed regardless.
But it's definitely one of the highlights of the episode, that's for sure.
It was good. So.
Okay, well, I'm not sure when exactly I was muted, but I didn't get very far.
I think it was right towards the end.
The end of the first sentence. Okay, I remember now. I'm sorry, that was fantastic.
That was
funny. What I had in mind was kind of fading in from black and having a glowing image of this Kronos Matrix MacGuffin that I came up with, and kind of a narrator's voiceover coming on saying, "There is no destiny, for the future is yet to be written," which would be the motto for my character, Dominus Prime. And the narrator would go on to say, as a result of the experimentation with the time window and interdimensional travel, the sinister race of beings known as the Quintessons have created what would be their most powerful force the universe has ever or will yet see. A device of such colossal energy that it can not only transcend space and time, but with its master's command, can also twist, manipulate, or even destroy it. It is known by only one name, the Kronos Matrix. Did I hear someone snickering at me? Oh, you're gone.
Hang on. You ready?
I thought I was getting snickered at.
Nope.
I was like, come on.
No.
Nope.
Turn page two. Proceed.
Yes. I did turn the page for those audio listeners.
All right, and for those of y'all that are old enough to remember, turn the page.
I would have missed those too, but I didn't.
I missed those.
Yeah, it's the Transformers books and when you had the cassette and the book, when it said, you know, turn the page, it would do the little chime like boink.
Yeah, probably the only time I don't miss those is that time. I think it was my freshman year of high school. I put Skid Row Slave to the Grind in the tape recorder when the teacher wasn't looking.
Which means, hey, wake up and turn the page.
Yes. She turns up all right.
You were
anyway,
talking.
Scene one, Moonbase 3. This is Blue Streak speaking. It says, hey, Alita, I'm picking up some weird readings coming from Quintessa. They don't look like anything we've ever seen before. Which Alita 1 responds, bring it up on the screen, Blue Streak. Blue Streak again. I don't know what to make of it. Perceptor. No, but I do. Alita. Perceptor. And then the scene kind of fades out. So we don't know what's being seen or what Perceptor recognizes. But something's up. Scene transitions to Skyfire and Jetfire. I don't remember if they were just walking down a hallway or flying or what, but Skyfire says, you know, brother, this has to be the first time I've been able to relax without having to worry about the Decepticons. Jetfire, not only that, but since Optimus gave us leave from Autobot City, we can see some of our old friends here on Moonbase 3, as well as Cybertron. Skyfire, I still can't believe the things that have happened recently. First, we got Optimus Prime back, destroyed the hate spores, revived Cybertron, regained the plasma energy key, and now all of the Decepticons are gone, lost in deep space. And that's the end of Season 1. So that might be like a total of, what, 18 seconds worth of screen time if it were some kind of show.
Turn the page.
Boom!
Thank you.
Scene 2, Scorponok. Galvatron. Soundwave, report. Soundwave. Scorponok. I'm sorry. Scorponok stabilized. Energy low. Position unknown. Core setting inconclusive. For some reason, I had him talking more like Omega Supreme. I'm not really sure why, but whatever. Zarek. Thanks to your incompetence, Galvatron. Oh, my God. Y-O-U apostrophe R-E. You are incompetence. I don't know. Wow. Anyway, thanks to your incompetence, Galvatron, we are floating in the far reaches of deep space with next to no power. I don't know how you managed to lead the Decepticons for so long, but I... ... Soundwave, attention, Galvatron. Strong energy source detected. Source, planet Quintessa. Galvatron, lost Zarek? I think not. You dared to cross me once before. It would be in your best interest to never do it again, or you yourself shall be destroyed. Don't think you are beyond death, flesh creature. Zarek, I form the head of Scorponok. You cannot destroy me without great sacrifice. You wouldn't dare. So he called Galvatron's bluff. Galvatron, I have created entire Transformers before, wherefore your death shall be of no consequence to me. Farewell, Nebulon, scum. Die. And he proceeds to blow him away. Boom!
That's right, Galvatron.
Yes. Zarek. No. There's like three O's there. So it's no. Did you seriously just do the page turn thing with an actual ding?
I'm too busy laughing. I didn't do anything.
Oh, okay. Is Brett dead? He's not moving.
Oh, I know what it was. I hit my bowl of coffee against my earlier bowl of coffee.
Nice. Wait, bowl of coffee?
Yeah, for TFYLP, when one cup just isn't enough.
Nice. Okay.
Hit it again. Hit it again.
There I you like go. That. Turn the that page. Works. I just did.
Okay, turn it again.
Turn it again.
Nice. So after Zarek screams, no. Galvatron. Constructicons, begin construction on a new head for Scorponok. Soundwave, proceed toward that energy source. Soundwave and Constructicons together? Yes, Lord Galvatron. Galvatron thinking to himself, Optimus Prime, the imminent demise of you and your kind is almost at hand. Wah-ha-ha-ha. Like I said, this thing is pretty well so bad it's toasted.
I can't breathe. It's not for the sinus congestion either.
Oh. A new user draws near. Who we got? somebody just joined the cast, just called listen. Video.
It's me.
Dog's going to have a coronary right here on the stage. Hang
a new
on.
A new challenger has appeared.
Who's video? Done.
I don't have any video because I just got home, so I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to jump in and talk.
It's video, so, man.
Who are you? Because your name actually says video, the word video.
Oh, really? Does it? It's Proto-Man.
Yeah. Okay. Hi, man.
Video Proto-Man.
It's video man from Spider-Man and his amazing
friends. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hey, Daniel.
Yo.
You have got to listen to this wonderful literature. We have been exposed to.
Literature is being...
Don, be quiet. Jim,
okay.
I'm going to give you, if you can wrap it up in 2 minutes. 2 minutes.
Probably. Okay. I've only got a couple of pages left. I'm through most of it.
Okay, so. Are you ready? Okay.
Daniel, you're in for a treat. Hang on.
Listening.
Go.
Scene 3, Chronal Energy. Perceptor. It would seem that the Quintessons are once again experimenting with chronal energy. A few years ago, Rodimus Prime sent Blaster, Cup, Superion, and I to investigate some activity on a nearby asteroid. It was there that we found the Quintesson, so it opened a portal through time, a time window, if you will. It nearly cost us not only our own lives, but almost destroyed the universe. We must stop their activity and destroy whatever device is causing the disturbance. Alita 1. Alita 1 to Blue Streak. I want you to form an investigation team. Meet me at Hangar A3. We are going to Quintessa. That's right, Hangar A3.
Turn the page.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Later, Blue Streak. Alita, we're here. Autobots, roll call. Blue Streak present. Retgar, I'm back. Blaster. Blaster's here, loud and clear. Warpath. Lock and load. Power glide. Roger. RC. Hey, sis. Yeah, I went there. Sorry. Dominus. I'm here, Alita. Jetfire. I'm here, too. Skyfire. Ditto. Cup. Let's get going already. Alita 1. Autobots, this mission is to destroy the object causing the disturbance. We must stop the Quintessons at any cost. Skylynx, all aboard? Alita 1, may Primus help us all. And scene. Scene 4, friend or foe? Monzo, with Lord Zaret gone, I am now in command of the Nebulon forces. We must construct a new head for Scorponok before those Constructicons do. Our supremacy over Decepticons and the universe depend on it. We must use Scorponok to destroy Galatron and enslave all Decepticons. Boom! The Hive Nebulons as a whole. Long live Lord Monzo. The changes, I don't know if it's really changed scene, but anyway. Galvatron. My Decepticons, my loyal Decepticons, I've called you all here for a reason. This new power source should enable us to finally defeat the Autobots. Once the Quintessons have been destroyed, you will have free reign over all you desire to plunder to your Sparks' content. Yes, I put Sparks in there, so this must have been around Beast Wars or Beast Machines. Anyway. But be warned, this will only be permitted for 2 cycles, as after the appointed time, I will give the order to destroy that wretched planet Quintessa. The Decepticons cheer as a whole. Silence! That is not all. I hope you are all aware of Zarek's recent demise. Because of this event, I expect the Nebulons can no longer be trusted. Wherefore, after this mission is completed, the Nebulons will all be destroyed and our heads returned to where they belong. Power to the Decepticons for all eternity. And it's some character I don't even remember writing called Vertigo. Onward to victory! Long live Galvatron, master of the universe! All Decepticons cheer. Scene 5, the arrival. Skylynx. Alita 1, we have arrived in orbit around Quintessa. What are your orders? And that's where it leaves off.
Oh! Just when it was getting to the good part!
I think that just gave me diabetes.
Why are we reading fan fiction?
Alright. I'm asking myself that very same question to this day.
Oh, Daniel, what it was is that we were talking, for the topic, you know, with them doing the movie expanded universe for Transformers.
Okay.
Pretty much anything is open now as far as media content, whether comics, television, web series, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
So we all got to thinking that if someone said, hey, you have been picked for the next Transformers series in any media that you think would tell your story the best, what do you want to see in a series, whether it's an animated series, like the one I did that was a comic series?
The thing is that I would handle it vastly different ways depending on what medium it would be. A movie I would handle vastly different than a TV series, than a comic book.
Exactly. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. Whatever medium you think would get your vision across the best way, how would you do it?
The best way my vision would get across would be similar to how DC does their animations direct to DVD. It would have to be something that's animation. I would go for something that's 2D, but actually done with a budget that wasn't, you know, garbage like most 2D animation is today. And it would be something that'd be direct to DVD so that I wouldn't have the limitations that I would of television in terms of censorship and what I would want to portray. Transformers is a story about war. It's a story about death. It's a story about fighting. I think that in this very soccer mom sensitive world that we live in today, unfortunately, we are not able to tell that story properly on television. So, I mean, I look at G.I. Joe Resolute, which was done, but not G.I. Joe. Was it called Resolute or Renegade. What was the one?
What
one that was the adult one?
Renegades.
Renegades. Thank you.
Yeah.
Renegades was something that was like, hey, we're going to do something that's like a web series, and then it'll be on DVD only, and it'll be a more, let's call it hard edge take on G.I. Joe. It wasn't successful, but it shows that this could exist from a Hasbro property. Unfortunately, the only way this exists right now is through comic books, which is also something that kind of is, you know, it has that open-ended hard edge. I mean, comic books since the 80s and the 90s have always been able to get away with blood, death, violence, you know, all kinds of topics that the second you even suggested slightly on television, you got 100 different groups, you know, mailing in trying to chew you apart. So, and not to mention, the worst thing that I hate with the way television works is because everything, when you do want to tell a story across, but you have to avoid censorship, then you do ambiguity. And let me tell you something, seeing from fandoms, and I'm not saying Transformers, but Steven Universe, My Little Pony, what's the other one called? Gravity Falls. When Avatar, The Last Airbender, the second you have to rely on ambiguity, all of a sudden Tumblr and DeviantArt and everyone else tries to fill in the blanks. Maybe these people are gay. Maybe these people are lesbian. Maybe these people are transgendered. Maybe these people are straight. Maybe they're murderers. Maybe they're pedophiles. And all because they can't tell the story properly in the animated series, because everything has to be ambiguous. So now you have the fans going, well, maybe Starscream's gay. Look at the way that he's talking to Knockout. He's complimenting his paint job. Totally, he wants to stick his servo in his exhaust port, you know, like where in comic books, James Roberts was able to straight across say these two characters love each other.
Couldn't they just say power links?
Well, either way. You know what I mean? But they were able to, without dancing around the point, because comics have always been able to not have to worry about censorship, they were able to do that. So to me, long answer short, as much as I'm horrible at doing that, it would have to be direct to DVD, 2D animation, good budget, like what DC does right now with a lot of their movies and stuff.
Yeah, but animated movies. Is what would you focus on?
I would do, honestly, I would do a pre-G1 story, something on Cybertron, no humans at all, not even the slightest lick of that stuff. A lot of times when I write stuff for TFCon, I like doing trench stories. I like doing stories where it's just, you know, the army men surviving on the field day to day, the shit that goes down in between that, the real war stories of Cybertron, you know, like that kind of stuff. And when you open it to stuff like that, then you could use characters that never been touched on. You could use Override. You could use the Trigger Bots. You could use weird stuff like that instead of just the tired old stuff. I mean, if Optimus Prime truly is a leader, he wouldn't be on the field. If Prowl was truly a security expert, he wouldn't be on the field. You know, like handle it how it really is handled in terms of telling a story. And this is a Canadian talking about war, which is like, really, you know, how many wars have we been in? Not many, but you know, it's just, that's the way that I perceive it. That's
here's a question. Always kind of you say kind of a pre G1 story. Are you talking before the 4 million year gap, like where the Ark and the Nemesis are still on Cybertron?
Or
are you
talking during
the 4 million dormancy?
I would say just before Prime leaves with the Ark, whichever version you want to use, whether it be the Marvel books, whether it be
okay, so during that 4 million year span, basically,
yeah, and you could tell one of a million things. There's so, like, the beautiful thing with just even G1 is there's so many characters. that you could touch on. Let's talk about Braver, the Action Master, before he became an Action Master. Mainframe. Let's talk about Rollout. Let's talk about, you know, the Trigger Bots. Let's talk about the Turbo Masters. There's so many characters that you could pull from and just do a whole story on that. What made Last Stands of the Records do so well with so many people was because they pulled from characters that you don't really know much about. You know, Iron Fist became this, like, staple because of Last Stand of the Wreckers, where before that, no one really even talked about that character. He was just that kind of rare UK Transformer toy that no one had, that no one really cared about. Then he became all of a sudden this popular thing. Next thing you know, he has a BotCon exclusive, he has a TFCC exclusive, he has an animated toy. So you could really breathe life into characters that had literally zero through that kind of medium. Or you could just do yet another movie that's high budget that only has 2 hours to tell a story, but you got to make it relatable, because if I would write a movie, oh man, then I'm going to have to dumb it down, because I, you know, obviously I don't want to fail. I could write the movie that the fans are going to like, but then, you know, the Joe Blows are going to be like, I don't get it, you know?
So
what the hell's a Cheetor?
You have to focus on your Prime and your Bumblebee.
Yeah, you got to go with the established IP that people know. You can't. Well, you know, it's hard to jump into those areas. That's why Beast Wars had a very rocky start when it first started, because a lot of people were just like, you know, this isn't, you know, truck not monkey, as they used to say. Like, you know, now people today, we appreciate it, but back then they didn't like change, and unfortunately that's a problem with the fandom and people as a whole. You know, they don't like change. And by the way, I like they have Dymos in the background there.
I have what?
Dymos. It's his Shogun Warrior in the background he's got there.
Oh.
I just noticed it now.
That's kind of like we were discussing some friends and I were discussing the Star Trek news with them doing the new series.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's set in the movie universe, this would be a great chance to explore the rest of the new movie universe that doesn't center on just Kirk and Kirk and the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Because you could do this in a TV series to flesh out
Dawn. The reality is all they're gonna have to do is all and the only reason why that first Star Trek movie, why it was successful, all they have to do is hire pretty looking people. That's it.
Well, no.
That's all it takes. They just gotta make sure they could literally do the story of Geordi LaForge and frickin', you know, Riker or whoever, total reboot, but as long as they hire pretty looking actors that look absolutely nothing like the source material, they'll do just fine.
No, that's not for the lens flare though.
That's not what I was shooting for.
That's what they're gonna have to do. And that's what they will do. You might have enjoyed the first movie, but the reason why it did so well was because they hired pretty people. That's what it was. All of a sudden, you're turning Spock into a sex symbol. Jesus, you know.
Okay, let me finish though, because
go ahead.
What I was saying is that if the movies are sticking to Kirk and the Enterprise,
yes,
this series is where you can tell other stories that you couldn't make a movie about. You can have another starship set in the same universe, but we're seeing the universe unfold. So right. a new ship and a new crew.
What do you think DC is doing right now?
Wait a minute. You could do your adventures of the Excalibur. You could do your whatever. You're right. You could do other ships out there. And if that's what you're talking about, if you're talking about, and I kind of like his idea too. He's talking about the point where Prime and everyone leaves. And this is actually, and I actually have it written here. It's funny that Daniel, I hadn't given my little pitch, but mine kind of goes close to yours, because I kind of put it between the G1 and what came next. And
yep,
that's kind of what you're saying, you know, when they're gone. So we're not going to have characters. We're not going to have Bumblebee. We're not going to have Prowl. We're not going to have Prawn. We're going to have Cybertronian-based characters that do other things, whether it be on Cybertron or maybe they go to a different planet. And maybe they have a different quest or a different, they're chasing someone else. Who knows? It's just a different
cycle
story altogether.
See, that's what I was trying to say, is that both things can follow a similar pattern. If you have a series, you can use other characters that are not the main ones and affecting your main timeline in both Star Trek and Transformers, sure, but still tie back into the main series, kind of like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tying back into the next movie.
Yes.
When it comes out. That's what I was saying. So you can get...
Yeah, but the best thing about this is, Don, is yes, you can combine it back if you want to, or you can leave it as its own.
Oh, definitely.
So if it starts going the way you don't want it to, and you can't get it to tie back to your G1 story, you leave it as is, and it's a tangent.
Especially the way that now fiction is being handled, in partakes to, let's say, the Marvel stuff, everything is an offshoot that's kind of in the same universe. The DC stuff, it kind of does its own thing, except the TV series kind of nod to each other so far. I mean, there's going to be contradictions of that down the line probably. But so far, at least, in the case of Arrow and Flash, I hate to go off on a tangent on a whole other property, but it's just – that's what – if you look at something like Arrow, no one gave a shit about Green Arrow for 40 years. No one cared. No one cared about this character. Oliver Green, I think his name was. No one cared about this guy. They slapped a pretty boy on him. They shaved off his beard. And all of a sudden, every woman, man, child, all of a sudden, everyone cared. And maybe there's a story behind that too. But you got the female audience. You got the male audience that are like, hey, he's kind of cool looking. He's not just some like hipster, picketing, the way he was in the comics was a lot different than how he is in the TV series, but he was a lot more of an environmentalist and stuff like that. But the point being is the way that, it'll be handled successfully is when you do that kind of stuff, if you want to get a mass audience, you got to really, there's a way that doesn't sit well with a lot of people, but it works, unfortunately. And that's how it is. I mean, there's a reason why there's a Megan Fox or any kind of pretty eye candy in every TF movie.
Well, speaking,
she's not there to develop character, I'll tell you that much.
You mean like Devastator?
Yeah.
But if you want some pretty eye candy for your shelf, there is two really good places you can check.
Good segue.
Of course, the first one is Captured Prey, one of our sponsors. Great toys, great prices, great service, CapturedPrey.com. Check them out for all the newest releases and also the upcoming pre-order, especially for the holidays, such as the recently announced Spartan from Mastermind Creations. That is out. It's available now, or will be available for most retailers soon. And also MP30 Ratchet was announced today, and I'm sure that pre-order will be up before too long.
Yes.
But if vintage is more your style, Megamus, where can they check for vintage stuff?
How about Mega Toy Fan? What do you think about that?
I've heard of him. Is he a good guy?
He's so-so. Sometimes he
does. Does he have a website, though?
Absolutely. MegaToyFan.com.
What would that website be?
MegaToyFan.com or MegaToyFan Facebook. It is said Mega Toy Fan also. Maximize your collection and minimize your cost. Mega Toy Fan.
Because all that stuff behind him, that's no museum. That stuff's for sale.
I'll sell anything. If I had a Massey, I'd sell it.
That's an exclusive.
You could. There's not enough zeros to add to the
He loves that cat.
Yes.
He's family.
All right.
He loves that cat as it impales him and shreds into pieces.
That's right.
It's tough love.
He loves every minute of it.
Well, so we got a little bit of fan fiction. We got a lot of fan fiction.
For the page.
Everyone's got their little idea of what they'd like to see. Mine's really not much different than really than what Don was talking about, even what Jim was talking about, and definitely what Dan was talking about, is, and mine's a little different, but for those readers who schlepped through all of the 80 episodes of the original Marvel Universe Transformers, waited for each episode, and just couldn't wait, and then finally got to number 80 and was just done. And we talked about this. All the storylines just kind of fell to the wayside, and I understand that they were told at the last minute that they were going to end it, this, that, and the other. And it's not the story writers. It's none of their fault. But and they did pick it up with Regeneration. Mm-hmm. But for those that have actually read the original 80 episodes and then read, and I do like Simon Furman, and I do like all the other writers, but actually read the dismal Regeneration series. I'm sorry, it was just not that good. I want something better. I want to know they have this lump of an idea, which was okay, and then they had the G1. I want a better integration between the two. I want all my storylines come to fruition. I want it all. That's what I want. I want someone, and I would love it in the same format that it was back in the 80s. We're talking about media also. How would you like it done? This, and I wanted so that if I took my original 80 issues out and laid them out and continued on with whatever we're going to do, it would flow. That Prime from issue 1 looks like Prime from issue 100.
Well, to cut you off there, to be fair, if you would have kept going, right, with the issues, like let's say it never stopped, the way that Marvel run was being dictated from a writing standpoint was by the toys. So you probably would have had a heavy Nucleon Action Master-based story if they didn't have to wrap things up. Because, I mean, yeah, we got Grimlock. We had Prime kind of having an Action Mastery kind of look to him. By the end of issue 80, but in general, that toy line and those toys were more or less ignored in the sense of just tying up the story and getting it done, you know, in time for everything. Where the way I would have seen it, they probably would have said, "Well, we got to figure out a way to bring back Megatron and make him an Action Master. We got to bring back Starscream and make him an Action Master. We got to." Why is Devastator now an Action Master? You know, like, why, you know, where do these Action Master partners come from? Who knows? They probably would have went in a very toy-esque direction that debatably would have been enjoyable or not been enjoyable. You know, like, the way that comic was always, like, I mean, good stuff came from that method, that being Thunderwing or Bludgeon, you know, right. Really fleshed out those guys that were just toys, literally. But then there's times, especially like I read those too, like the early, I'd have to say around like issues about 20 to about 35 was when they were really showing that they were like, well, today we got to introduce the Aerial Bots. Well, today we got to introduce Menasor. Well, today we got to introduce Trypticon. It started to really feel that, to the point that I'm pretty sure at some point, if they would have continued, they would have had to integrate whatever was the ongoing toy line. And we had Action Masters. It was, you know, not much else. There was Micro Masters kicking around, the last remnants of those too. And then all of a sudden they would hit a two-year slump. Well, one-year slump. It's a one-year-and-a-half slump if you don't count the UK and Japan. So they'd have to ignore everything else unless they want to integrate that stuff. If Transformers was successful, maybe they would have imported that, you know, Japanese stuff that was going on at the same time, and then that would have been integrated into the story. Maybe not. You know, G2, a lot of those toys in the G2 comic were, you know, influenced by what was happening toy-wise with them. Yes, we didn't get a G2 Superion and a G2 Bruticus, and a lot of the other G2 later G2 toys didn't appear, like the laser rods and stuff like that. But G2 was the 90s. Comic books were in a different place.
Well, I see where you're going. But I'm going to go back and say that I also believe that you had a lot of good story arcs.
Yeah, you did. I agree.
You know, whether you want to believe it or not, the whole story arc way back with Prime and the computer, where it, you know, at the very end where he got himself blown up, the good story arc. I love that, and it had nothing to do. It had nothing to do with the toys. Now everyone knows that the comic was promoted by the toys. Toys were promoted by the comics. Blah blah blah. So we know that we would have got Action Man, so we would have got this, that, and the other. But I still believe that tucked in there, they would have had their good writing, their good story arcs, and we would have had really, really good stories out of it. And that's what I wanted to see. You know, you're talking about a lot of I mean, right off the top of my head, I can't think of any. But there was a lot of loose ends that weren't tied together that they could have done. And I still to this day think it needs to be done.
Oh, there's
to complete the story.
I've always said this about Transformers. Every single frickin' line is filled with so many toys of characters that have never spoken a word. You know, you could easily just look at movie 2009, just the Scouts. Just the Scouts. And you have, like, right away, like, 14 to 15 characters that have absolutely no story behind them. You could go to Beast Wars and look at Wave 3, just the Predacons. Man of Terror, Jetstorm, Wolf Fang, you know, K-9, so many characters that you could literally just take a handful of characters, five new Autobots, five new Decepticons, five new Maximals, five new Predacons, and you could write a whole series around that. Lord knows they did with Beast Wars. You know, they literally took five characters from each side of that toy line and then did two repaints just for the hell of keeping the budget down and wrote, arguably, in my opinion, the best Transformer series ever made. You know,
Thank you.
It shows that you don't need to have a shit ton of characters. You don't need to have a whole bunch of memorable characters. You just need to have character development, a good story, and make it just pretty enough looking so that you get the people who would normally criticize, oh, the animation's ugly. That was the one thing that hurt animated was I love animated, but a lot of people, it was a hard pill to swallow because they didn't like the look. But Beast Wars had the look. At the time, it was state of the art in terms of animation. The only thing that was going against Beast Wars was the people who didn't like change. That was it. And, you know, too bad for those people. They missed out, you know?
True. But getting back to what I was saying, I still believe, and we're going to wrap this up, and I'm going to get everyone's view on a couple different things. Okay. But I still believe that you had a lot of good story. You had a lot of good meat still on the bone that could have been, fleshed out. And I think it may not have gone another 80 to 100 episodes or issues, but I'm the guy that after reading that 1 through 80, I felt shunted. I felt like that I was not given what I wanted entirely. I wanted to know what happened. And then it was years later when the regeneration came out and they talked about it, and I was like, I can't wait. I love it. I'll stand in line for this. And I got it, and I was like, ugh. They really just did it just to do it.
It was written by Simon without the influence of these toys are coming out, feature these, you know? So he wrote it from a standpoint where, yeah, I could talk a lot about Rodimus because I don't have to worry about a Power Master Prime toy coming out. I don't have to worry about, an Action Master toy. So he wrote it from that angle, especially like the way that he wrote the end of the book was just totally wrapping up everything, where if you're talking about a toy line that is going to continuously keep going and putting out new product, you're not going to have like Rodimus. Well, I hope this isn't spoilers for people, but you're not going to have like Cybertron practically rebooting itself, which I mean, the end of the book more or less is like the end and a new beginning in a sense. Like it literally is the end of G1. Like that's
But if you remember, he even he even said why he did all that. And I do understand that. And that's what we got. But that's not what I wanted. I'm okay with that, but that's not what I wanted.
I think
I wanted
you,
what you wanted,
it could have existed if not for Simon having the limit of 20 issues.
Right.
I think Simon was like given, look, you have 20 issues to get to 100, spread it across. Where it's something that it's like if there's no limit, if there's like, look, this is going to be an ongoing series, you don't have to worry about when this is going to end, just tell your stories, that's when you would have gotten what you would have wanted. You would have gotten your Nightbeat miniseries. You would have gotten explanation. What happened to all the humans on the Headmaster planet? You know, when Galen left and he left his wife behind and that famous last line where she's never going to see him again, you know, like all that kind of stuff. There's so much stuff that you could play it up and continued on. I mean, God, I'm trying to think of some other like loose ends. I mean, there's so many other human characters that were never just touched on.
Well, that was the other thing. And I knew it wasn't supposed to be a human comic, but it became that.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you got your Neo Knights and all that stuff. And
especially the Neo Knights, yeah.
Yeah, but let's just say that I'm one of the people that was very, very excited when Regeneration was announced, but I was let down. And it's not Simon Furman. I like him as a writer. I liked him, but it just did not complete what I wanted. And maybe what I wanted could not be obtained. But that's just me. That's just me. Now, what I want to do, real quick,
what
I want to do in closing, I want to get everyone to tell me if they could do one, let's just go with a line, one line in one media, what would it be? And I'm going to start with Don.
How do you mean?
Well, if you were going to continue or change one, you know, if you were going to change Cybertron to be this, if you're going to change Energon to be this, if you whatever, and you were going to do it in the comic realm, in the on the TV, if you were going to make a multi-million-dollar movie. What would be your two, if you were going to click them both together, if you were going to pitch this to someone, what were the two things that you would line up together?
I would probably say, actually, I can't think of anything right now. I really can't think of anything right now.
That's all right. We'll go to Jim.
Any line or series?
If you had full reign of what you wanted to do, and you could start with one line or genre, however you wanted, and you had to pick a media in which to portray it, how would you do it?
This might sound a little off, but I would honestly do the 2001 Robots in the Skies.
You like the R.I.D.?
I do. It was a little off the wall. You know, it's different than what we were used to. You know, and we haven't seen anything quite like it. But overall, it was a fun and enjoyable show. You had your serious moments. You had your funny bits. You know, but the characters had a lot of personality. They had quirks. They had, Just these different traits that you don't really see in too many shows, and I think that really helped it to appeal to the fans.
And how would you portray that?
Oh man, I would say probably continuing on with the anime style. I don't know if I would have made it quite as goofy looking as a design. I would have made it more. I guess maybe closer to like a Brave Gal Gadot type animation.
Okay.
But
Obari.
Yeah.
But you would
something like that. But
you would go with the cartoon type.
Because there were features.
The Obari style, which is regardless of how the toys look, stylize it for the show.
Sure.
Hey guys, I'm sorry, I've got to go. I'll something's come up. I'll talk to y'all later.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Talk to you later.
I mean, there's just really a lot of features about that series that were just very enjoyable. I mean, Sideburn's obsession with red cars, Skybite and his haiku poetry. You know, it's just different odds and ends like that, you know.
Yeah, but see, that's the stuff to me that just turned me completely off on that. I couldn't stand that.
Well, I couldn't
It's also what not the source material was either. Car robots was nothing like that.
as long as it doesn't take away from the story overall and the plot points, I think that little quirks like that are neat things to show a little bit more about their individual personality. You know, Prowl always adhering to the letter of the law, you know, without fail. Being a little bit of a kind of a redneck. You know, Ultra Magnus being phallus, should we say, until he eventually warmed back up to Optimus. But, you know, just little things. It just made the series really enjoyable. And I think anime was a smart move for that.
So, Daniel? Yeah.
It would be 1999. We'd bring back that mainframe crew.
Okay.
We would tell Fox to not stick their nose in and dictate how the story is being told, and we'd have a proper Beast Wars Season 4. Because I find that Beast Machine Season 1, while it was Fox and Mainframe working together, they stuck their nose in and kind of influenced how storytelling, the way that the characters are being portrayed, where I liked how Season 3 of Beast Wars was being handled because there was less influence from outside sources influencing how Mainframe was going to tell a story, how the writers Larry DiTilio and you know, how they were trying to tell their story, somehow continue it instead of you know, instead of the whole everything going down in the last couple of episodes with Agenda, you know.
Wow.
Have it keep going. You have a whole bunch of characters. You have that, again, still at the time, state-of-the-art CG.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, G1, there's so many, like, and especially at the time of Car Robots, which, again, if Beast Wars Season 4 would have happened, Car Robots would have been happening at the same time in Japan. But at the same time, also, when Car Robots was in Japan, we had the IDW G1 comics. So G1 will always find its way to get a medium. So, but to me, Beast Wars, it still had something good going on. You could have continued it with a CG series, continued with that cast, with that great story development, no hitting the reboot button like they kind of did with Beast Machines. I understand the whole politics of it, but there was, continue that story, Beast Wars Season 4, same CG, same crew, same writers, same everything, same voice actors. G1 will find its way. Pat Lee, as much as people rag on Dreamwave, they weren't doing a terrible job with that comic, especially the ongoing series. They were leading to something. Granted, it was its own continuity and its own story, but I liked what they were doing. It was a great art style. G1 will always find its way. It's the strongest medium, so I'm never concerned about what's going to come of it. Look, we got a Combiner Wars Machinima made for web series coming soon based on the G1 universe. Granted, it's not the G1 universe we know, but it's the IDW one. But the point is that it shows that G1 will always find its way to have a story told.
Well, I'm going to start off by saying, damn you. What I was going to say, but I'm going to go a little different then,
okay?
Because I was thinking that Beast Wars, it just seemed like Beast Wars and Beast Machines, we could have done more in between.
It's you know what it is? It's Fox's fault, because when Fox Kids asked for the exclusive rights to air it, that changed everything. Then right away they had a choice of, here's how we're going to depict the characters. They're like, we want the good guys to have defensive weapons. We want the bad guys to have offensive weapons. There was just this, you know, they wanted that you didn't have to watch Beast Wars really to know what was going on. We're going to change how the characters are. I hated how a character that was Rat Trap, better dead than Pred, as he used to say. And now here he is working for Megatron for some guns. You know, like, it was – to me, the only character in that show that had a proper progression was Cheetor. Everyone else was just, here's independent Black Arachnia. Now she's dependent Black Arachnia.
Primal did.
Primal, maybe. Again, under those circumstances, perhaps. But
he had to adjust. But if I had to change it, given that I can't take what you just said because I was going that route.
More or less that, yeah. Well, that's...
I also felt it was rushed from Beast Wars to the Transmetal phase. I think there was a lot of story, and I think they could have done more before they went to and found Prime and the Ark, which started that, spiraled it into it.
I think there's still so much more with the Valk. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the
Valk was literally swept under the rug in the last season.
Correct.
It was insane. Like it to me, it's still an open-ended story.
Well, I'll give you another example. How often did you see the primates?
Of course. Well, that's also because of animation models. But right. there's a reason for it. Yeah.
Right. Well, exactly. But I'm sorry. As far as you know, I gave you no limits on this. We're not talking about a budget.
But you know what it is, though? I always try to approach it from a logical standpoint, because I hate being that guy that's like, well, why don't they just do this? You know, but it's like, yeah, but then, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too sometimes, unfortunately. So,
well,
but
sure,
to me,
but I can tell you right
to me,
now.
I feel that season four could have been something that could have existed. I think it was just them wanting to do something different, and it was Fox that kept freaking pushing them, going, right, we want exclusive rights to air this before everyone, because YTV and a lot of other channels got to air season 3 and 2 before them, and I don't know, they were pissy about it.
One of the things I wanted to do is, I told you, and I told everyone else, I wanted to get you on here, because one of the things we want to do is maybe we will throw out pipe dreams and this, that, and the other. And you can kind of bring it down to earth a little bit. But the whole idea is this is – none of this is going to happen, of course. This is just what we want. So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things,
if we're talking pipe dream, then it's literally like me going, okay, we're going to have Rodimus and it's going to be drawn by Matsuno Ibarri, done in the Studio Ox style – in that Gal Geiger Brave writing style, but that would totally not fly at all, because as much as I love Rodimus, he's not the established IP that works in a broad spectrum, where 3 seasons of Beast Wars, you have so much built-in fandom that it would just flow easily.
Yes, but you don't know that. You don't know that. If you start, you start pushing for it, my point being is if it's something that you want, express it. Why not? What's it going to hurt? And not to mention, people out there, you know, hey, maybe they want to know. Maybe they agree with you, and they'd be like, you know what? I didn't know anyone else thought the same way that I did about this. Why not? So that's my point in it. But we are getting I think we've hit this enough. The whole point of this was just to get people thinking. You know, what would you do? How would you change it? Because, and in my opinion, a lot of the media is starting to listen and gear towards the collectors. I mean, perfect example is Hasbro and some of their choices for the toys has been geared towards the collectors.
Minor Wars.
Well, there's a whole – I did a whole rant on this recently about why that's actually happening. It's more so because, I mean, you look at the presence right now of how the toy industry is going and how Hasbro is marketing Transformers. If you're marketing towards children, that's what the Rescue Bots line is for. Even the RID 2.0 line – I almost feel like that line solely exists to win over the cell phone market kids and everything. Combiner Wars, there's an advertising, you know, gimmick with Combiner Wars through the cell phone industry through Battle Tactics. The Battle Tactics cell phone game, every single character in that game is a Combiner War toy or a Generations toy. It's so as it stands right now, the entire toy industry is more and more leaning towards the adult market, unless it's some big blockbuster movie, of course. I mean, Star Wars and everything.
Right. But your big hitters, you know, you got your Combiner Wars, and yes, they're trying to get everyone into it. but it's still geared towards collectors.
It's geared towards collectors while trying to nurture a new audience as best they could. I mean, there's a reason why, like, the new thing now, and this isn't just Hasbro and Transformers, this is everything. The new thing now that every company is doing, go into your play school section of any Toys R Us. You're going to notice they do a kiddie Rescue Bot-esque version of Power Rangers. They do a kiddie Rescue Bots-esque version of Ninja Turtles. They did a kiddie Rescue Bots-esque version of all the Marvel properties, all the DC properties, of Batman, of the, they call them the Super Friends series. Right now, the toy industry is freaking out because kids aren't playing with toys. So now they're shifting their market to the play school division so that they can nurture them early, in other words, ages like 1 to 4, 1 to 5, and then get them hooked on toys early before a cell phone falls in their hands and they lose them forever.
Well, that's the kind of strategy that Hasbro was talking about anyway, is they said that there's the three phases in the Transformers market. That there's the Rescue Bots starting out, and then there's Robots in Disguise, and then there's Generations as the kids grow older.
Well, the sad reality, though, actually, is that while they market it like that, they make it seem like there's those three transitions. But I really think that, and the sad truth is, and I see this through my YouTube videos, through analytics and stuff, where when I do Rescue Bot videos. The truth is Rescue Bots has been very successful for Hasbro, but the primary reason for that is because parents have been influencing what their children are buying. So the parents are like, I like Transformers, so I'm going to buy Rescue Bots for my kids because I liked Transformers. But, I mean, I was at BotCon, and you would see kids are in their cell phones while their adult parents are the ones staring at the toys. And there's a huge transition that, in all honesty, we can't fight against. And all we have to do is more or less be like Japan. Japan a long time ago said, you know what, screw it. Kids don't like toys anymore. Let's focus on an adult market. And that's why Japanese toys for the past 15 years, I mean, we're only starting to catch up now, but for the past 15 years, Japanese toys have really been top of the line and aimed at an adult market because, in all honesty, well, there's a whole other reason, too. There's birth, issues over there and a whole bunch of other reasons too, but the primary reason is kids don't play with toys anymore in Japan. That happened to them a long time ago. It dawned on them, and then all of a sudden all these toy lines, SH Figure Arts and Figmas and Masterpiece, Masterpiece is a Japanese toy line that we only get the breadcrumbs of it afterwards if we're lucky. Whenever we get a Prowl or a Star Saber, where we actually didn't get Star Saber, but if we get anything, it's only because it's like Hasbro going like, okay, we'll throw you a bone. But Masterpiece is a Japanese-made line for an adult collector market, not for kids.
Year of the Platypus.
Excuse me?
Year of the Platypus.
Oh, yeah. It's
everything's orange and translucent.
And Hasbro especially, and specifically through the Transformer toy line, I've said this so many times, Transformers is a survivor line. And what I mean by that is they literally have been pulling every rabbit out of the hat since 1988 to stay alive. And what I mean by that is in 1987, Ninja Turtles came around. Mutants and action figures became really popular. Boom, here comes the Pretenders. Here's monsters. Here's mutants. Here's a more action figure-esque simplicity because Ninja Turtles paralleled at the exact same time was kicking their butt on the shelves. Oh, man, here comes Micro Machines. Micro Machines are doing great. Boom, what happens the exact same year? Here's Micro Masters. It's Micros that transform, And then it's like, oh, hey, action figures are really popular. Toy Biz is kicking ass with those X-Men action figures and Marvel and stuff. Boom, here comes the Action Masters. Action figure Transformers. They've always done something to survive. Then you fast forward. Hey, Pokemon is popular. Boom, here comes Armada. Oh, wow, Bakugan and Beyblade is really popular. Here's your Bot Shots. Oh, wow, Lego's really popular. Here's your Creo. Oh, wow, Hero Factory and Bionicles is really popular. Here's your Constructobots. They will constantly be doing whatever it takes to survive as the market is changing. And they've been doing that since 1987. And that's why whenever people get freaked out by something Hasbro does, it's because they're just trying to get a little piece of that money. And you know what's the new evolution? When third party does something and takes away their money, they got to do something to survive too. hey, look at Quake Wave, boom, here's a Shock Wave.
Right, you know? Right.
And, we've touched
a little bit about that, and that might make for another good episode.
Oh, that's a whole loaded discussion.
I just have one brief point about that to go off of what he said. Is the reason why you were saying, you know, is the Survivor line, and that is because Transformers, you know, in all of its incarnations, all of its generations and eras, has only ever been about one constant, one thing across the multiverses, across the toys, the comics, the cartoons, the movies, everything, and that is change. It has never been a solid, static thing except for change. From form to form, from car to beast, from cartoon to movie, from comic to whatever.
Well, that's what keeps that 80s property consistent and successful, precisely, is the ability to change itself, because that's where He-Man and G.I. Joe and every other 80s property, Thundercats, where they have not been able to survive because they refuse to change what is their play pattern, what is their characters in the face of fans, unfortunately, which sometimes could be the worst thing, is trying to appease fans. Because, I mean, G.I. Joe is where it is today because the fans wouldn't let it be anything else, you know? Like, and, I mean, name another 80s property that spawned from the 80s that still is around today, that really is successful around today. And don't say, like, oh, He-Man has his classics, Turtles, you know, Matty collectible once every 2 months, or G.I. Joe Turtles can barely get a toy out.
I'm not going to go into this, but Star Wars.
But Star Wars is 70s.
The 70s. 70s.
It still gets into the 80s.
If yeah, I know.
The hot spot was the 80s. But I'll go so far as to say also it has changed itself as well. It has taken part of what, and I think I really do, and if you, my Star Wars fans out there, want to yell at me, whatever, hey, they know how to get a hold of us. And, you know, I'll take criticism as much as comments and praise. But I think Star Wars did take a little cue from Transformers and did change itself. It has changed itself.
Star Wars was a Micro Machine line. Star Wars had a transforming line. Star Wars, yes. Star Wars. But the thing with Star Wars, though, is that they kind of kick-started the 90s action figure collectible thing with the Power of the Force line. Yep. When that line came out, that really, you know, for toys collecting as a whole, Star Wars is very influential. I mean, all the way back to the holiday pack where George started the whole plastic crack that exists today. I mean, it was George. Oh, wow. It was thanks to George Lucas that we have Transformers and G.I. Joe and everything, because of, I mean, for anyone that knows that whole story with the FDA and all kinds of stuff where toys weren't allowed to have action figures based off of IP franchises and movies, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, the point being is that Star Wars is the forerunner for all of this, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, we could actually, and I even thought about doing a little segment of comparing the two. But yes, a lot of what Transformers did and how they've become, as well as other lines, does have a lot to pay homage to Star Wars. With the licensing, the fact that it kept going, the fact that it changed, and then from what, 85 to 95, 10 years later, reinvented itself and made it such a collectible that brought collecting back in, all that stuff. We could go into that, but that's regardless. Anyway, I think we're going to wrap this up.
Sounds good.
You know, we've given what we want. What we want is the moon. You know, give it to us, we'll be happy, and then we're going to want Mars, so it doesn't matter. Pretty much, that was what our whole gist of this was. And I was kind of hoping that we would just get, you know, everyone's little aspect of it. And if you want to comment on it, please do. And we'll see where it goes from there. But as for tonight, I think we're done. I'm going to call it. Jim, give us your closing. Good.
YLP, the Mary Sue of the Transformers fandom. Nice.
Dan?
Follow me at ProtoMan on Twitter. Check me out, ProtoRetro, on YouTube. And I don't know. That's all I could really say.
Sweet. Short and sweet.
All but, right.
That's what she said.
Nice hearing everyone and their aspects of this. And just want to say thanks for joining us and tuning in with us next week, because you never know what we're going to come up with. And thanks for watching TFYLP. Take care.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.